Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the In the Chuck podcast. We've got a special episode today with a guest. Our friend from Twitter, Snitfit, is here. How you doing today, Snitfit?
Fantastic. Good morning.
Good morning.
It took me a second to figure out this simple app, so apologize for that.
I don't know how simple it is. They're pretty confusing. That's not a problem at all. So for those of you not familiar with Snitfit, he's everybody's favorite cynic on Twitter. He's at Snitfit, S-N-I-T-F-I-T. So how did you come up with that name?
Well, I used to play a video game, Nintendo game called Zelda. A Snitfit was a nickname given to these characters that attacked anyone that came close to them. And regardless of their ideology or motives. And they were mostly a nuisance. So since I like to be a nuisance to politicians and hypocrites, I thought that would be and just a nuisance and not really cause any damage, I thought Snitfit would be a perfect avatar for me.
There you go. That's pretty good. So are you watching the coverage of the bombings in Austin? The police caught up with that guy and tracked him down.
I have been watching, and despite what's on the news and all the back padding, we can thank FedEx for doing that, I believe.
Were they integral part of that?
Well, if the guy had went to the U.S. Postal Service, it would take him 24 years to find him.
You know, they never would have caught him. Yeah, the Unabomber thing was a disaster.
Oh, well, they had the guy, Tarucci, I believe is his name, who caught the Unabomber. And he's on all the shows. But the fact
I thought his brother caught the Unabomber. The Unabomber's brother.
That is what I was going to point out, and I've sent that out, is that his brother just happened to read the manifest he'd sent out.
Right.
And he recognized some early writings from his brother from, 30, 40 years earlier when he was in college.
Right.
And he was the one that actually caught him. And told him who he was, where he lived, the whole nine yards.
Right. And wasn't he, and I could be, this could be a like an Alex Jones thing, but wasn't the Unabomber also one of the students at Harvard or MIT that was experimented on by the CIA?
That is a rumor that I've heard, but the fact is that Ted Kaczynski was a certifiable genius.
Right, right.
And he a certifiable genius with an MIT engineering type of, physics type of background, education,
right.
Living on Walden's Pond. So he was a nut, and he had been identified as on the fringe all the way back to college.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. It was a long history of him being a little off. But this guy in Austin, that was from the photo I saw, is a much younger guy, right?
Supposedly 24-year-old white boy from a affluent suburban neighborhood.
I was trying to look up it on Twitter a little bit to catch some of the news of it, and it looks like the left is already coming out and saying he's racist, even though he blew up white people.
Yeah, I would be very surprised, and actually, I don't know what the word is, but if they manage to tie a random bomber to a racial motive, I'll have to give them kudos for that.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, because it was random, right? He wasn't like he was it's not like that kid in South Carolina with the church.
Totally random. Totally random.
Just trying to create chaos.
Trying to create chaos. That's yeah. Basically what it was. That's basically awesome. a 24-year-old, 10-year-old seeking attention.
Right, right. Or a nihilist. Just wants to destroy everything. Well, you know, it's funny to me. It really, you know, it went on, I guess, for 17 days, and to me, it reminded me so much of the DC Sniper, like that time when it seemed so random, and it seemed like that's the most dangerous thing or the most terrifying thing, you know, like back in DC with that sniper, with a, you know, lady pumping gas got shot, just totally random things, and I'm really glad for the people of Austin that it's over. And you can only assume if he didn't get caught, it would started to spread out further if he was using FedEx as his delivery service.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the DC shooters were that, you know, I'm in Chesapeake, and so it was happening just north of here. You know, Fredericksburg is only about 100 miles away.
Right.
But they brought them down here to try them, because they wanted an impartial jury. So.
The DC guys?
Yeah, they were actually tried here in our little Chesapeake jail.
Great.
Or, you know, Chesapeake courthouse.
Yeah, super. Well, yeah, that was awful. So you're down in Virginia, and so are you feeling this nor'easter that we've got going on up here? Or did you just get rain or nothing, or what happened with that?
Well, we get rain. We're out in Chesapeake. We're technically on an island because of the intercoastal waterway.
Okay.
And we've got the bay to the north, the Gulf Stream to the east, and the Cortex Sound to the south. We rarely, 35, 40 miles inland, you know, historic Williamsburg, they could get
right.
No, we might not get nothing but rain here. So we're very lucky where we're at. But we're just getting rain.
Like right, you're getting rain today?
Yeah. Just rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, up here we're getting another doozy of a storm.
You're in southeastern Michigan, right?
No, I'm in upstate New York.
Oh, upstate New York. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm Saratoga County, so north of Albany, like the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains. So it was 13 degrees yesterday. We still got a foot or two of snow on the ground, and it's going to snow again today, March 21st.
If it snowed a foot here, they'd have to send in the National Guard.
That's funny. I actually lived in Raleigh for about a year, and the year I was there, Raleigh, North Carolina, the year I was there, they got a foot of snow. Well, it wasn't quite a foot. It was like 8 inches of snow, and they shut the state down. Because they didn't know what to do.
Well, you know, we've only got one snowplow here in this area, and it wasn't
enough to
use it. So,
like my town, 80% of our budget is snow removal, and you know, we've got a fleet. I think we've got 20 plows just for one town.
Yeah, I remember one time in the early '90s, late January, February, I flew into Syracuse my first time. You know, I'm from Louisiana.
Oh, are you? Yeah, you're relaxed.
So flying in, you know, we was coming for the landing, and me and my buddy, who's from Texas, we were looking down and thinking, how beautiful, like a picture card. Nice and smooth and white with smoke coming out of the little chimneys and everything. And when we landed, we had no idea that it was 2 feet of snow. And you know, we've got our sneakers on, you know, and our khaki pants. We almost froze to death.
That's funny. Yeah, it's definitely a culture shock, I think, for people who don't know. My wife's from Florida, and she loves it, ironically enough. So she grew up, she credits that to the fact that she grew up watching movies, and you see in the movies they have an autumn with the leaves falling and the winter with the snow and all that stuff. And so it's something that she missed being from the west coast of Florida. So she loves it up here. But
I could do without the snow.
Yeah, and honestly, in March, I could do without it too.
Yeah, but this is our fourth nor'easter,
right?
In 4 weeks.
Yeah. It's been a crazy March. So the other thing,
go ahead.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the criticism of Trump for congratulating Putin on winning the presidential election in Russia. I think from being from New York. And knowing that Trump has that New York City construction real estate background, to me it's funny because I know he probably says all kinds of things he doesn't really mean. You know, it doesn't necessarily, just because he says congratulations doesn't mean he really is happy about it or he's really congratulating. You know, sometimes you just say things you're supposed to say, and I think especially as a president, you would just say something like that regardless. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that when you go to a family reunion, you know, you have to say things that you have to say.
Right.
The piece. Yeah. And just like, you know, how you treat your in-laws.
Yeah. I mean, well, you think at some point or another in the next 7 years that he's going to probably need something from Putin and to aggravate him by not saying congratulations. Seems like a silly thing. It's a silly hill to die on.
Well, you know, the other thing is that his last election was no less rigged, unfair, blah, 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 than this one. And I tweeted out the White House and Obama's congratulatory statement.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny. But they, well, that's the, I mean, that's the one thing on the, I think where the left is really losing people is that they're so well, it's just so disingenuous.
Yes.
You know, the you think back to the Bush, and I don't know if everyone listening is old enough to remember when Bush was president, but you think back to the Bush era when the criticisms of him over the war and the use of drones was so strong. You know, they were calling him evil, and they would draw devil horns on him, and they do all these different things. And then Obama was elected and was supposed to be this great new era. They gave him a Nobel Peace Prize before he even took office, and then nothing changed. And I remember talking to my mother, and she's a lifelong Democrat, like a Kennedy did. And she was talking about how it was better that Obama was in there now because all this stuff with the war would stop. And it was probably a year into it. And I said, okay, what's changed? Like what policy is not the same as before? And it took her a couple of days of researching it to come back and tell me, oh, I guess nothing's changed.
Well, a lot of people don't consider that despite what was going on in the Middle East, you know, you got good actors, bad actors.
Sure.
Good leaders, bad leaders, you know, the whole range. But before the Arab Spring, the reset with Russia and the Arab Spring, okay, Russia wasn't in Crimea. Russia wasn't correct. In Ukraine. Russia wasn't in, actually, Syria was the most secular, well-run, and modern Middle East countries and well-run countries
correct.
There.
100%.
Libya was a well-run, peaceful, you know, as peaceful and as run as a Muslim country can be, you know, by our standards. But Libya was...
Well, my podcast yesterday, I talked about the fact that you know, Gaddafi, although he had a terrible history with certain things, you know, by the year 2000, he'd become an ally in the war on terror and was actively fighting Al-Qaeda.
Well, people don't realize that Gaddafi was Sunni. So
right.
He was a natural ally against the Shiites and Iran, you know?
Correct.
Iraq was Sunni, you know?
Right.
Syria was a Sunni sect, which was allied with the Sunnis in Iraq. So they were anti-Shiite. Anti-pushback against Iran.
And when you see Assad, he's wearing a suit and tie like a businessman. He's not trying to present himself as like the Arab savior or the Muslim savior. He's trying to have a secular state. And under Assad, the Christians in Syria were safe. And that's one of the oldest Christian populations on the planet.
And the Jews were safe there too.
Right.
So, and also the Kurds.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I mean, Syria was a multicultural... mostly secular, and you know, Assad is a doctor,
right?
He's trained in America, he's a doctor,
right?
You know, he had to be tough because he was in a tough neighborhood.
Well, and then at some point, you say to yourself, okay, so like if you even go to Egypt with Mubarak, like, did he run a brutal police state? Well, yeah, but. Without him there, look what happened in the power vacuum. You get Christians slaughtering each other. You got people murdering each other in the streets. And the military had to take back over the country. So it's like, well, I don't think it was better without him, even for the people in Egypt.
Well, you know, he gets a lot of But Bart got a lot of criticism from the from liberals,
right,
on the left, because of his you know, brutal military dictatorship. But what people forget is that 90%, 95% of his brutal militancy was directed towards the Muslim Brotherhood, which was instigated and funded by the Iranians.
Correct.
So yeah, he was rounding people up, you know, and he was a SOB, but he was pushed back, you know, pushing back against what all non-Shiite Muslim countries consider a terrorist organization. You know, Saudi Arabia just declared the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Guess what they're doing? They're rounding them up. They're killing them in Yemen. So,
oh, yeah, and Saudi Arabia somehow always gets a pass when they start criticizing oppressive regimes, because I think the amount of money they donate, the amount of money they donate to political campaigns, and the number of companies that they sit on the boards of.
The Saudis are now, you know, are evil because they're pushing back against Iran, and they're making deals with. I mean, the criticism yesterday with the Crown Prince being in the White House for a White House visit, you know, the left has come unhinged.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. I don't know if you followed Jesse Kelly on Twitter. He's a former. Okay, so he, you know, once a week or so puts out something where he says all they have to, and then post either a link or a screenshot of some completely insane thing the Democrats are doing. And I think it's so funny because he's right. You know, like in this era, if they would just kind of like chill out and be sort of normal and rational, they would probably do very well, but they just can't control themselves.
The other thing about the liberals is if you took every, and I call them sects, S-E-C-T-S,
right,
the different factions of the Democratic Party, you know, from, you know, the LGBT to the Muslims, for example, and everything in between. If you were to take each one of those groups and put them into a room, they would kill each other.
Yeah, my father used to say that even back in the 80s and early 90s about the efforts of the Democrats to get, like, union factory workers from the Midwest and like coastal super liberals to agree on anything. It just seems so silly. Like, what an odd group of people to try to get together. And I think what you see over time is, and this is like what really led, I think, to Trump's victory, is they've abandoned the factory workers. They've just gone full on coastal, you know, coastal total, you know, basically communists.
The what Trump has managed to do, which no other president has managed to do since probably Eisenhower, I would think, is that he's got the labor unions in the sense of the private labor unions, which I don't have a problem with. I have no problem with, you know, I've always been in management, so I've always obviously taken management side. I've never been in a member of a union, but I've worked with them in the private sector. More power to them. It's an even playing field between management and the labor unions. But the government, as I like to say, labor unions, those things need to be abolished. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't even exist if Kennedy had not been forced to sign an executive order allowing them. So,
well, yeah, look at what they're doing. To, you know, it's one thing to say that they shouldn't exist. But if you even just look at what they're doing to places like Detroit and the state of Michigan and eventually the state of New York, although it hasn't happened yet, you know, that these pension deals that they make for themselves, because they're sitting on both sides of the negotiating table and they negotiate these deals for themselves, they're going to bankrupt us all.
You retire
at 50 and get a $100,000 pension every year the rest of your life plus full medical and expect the taxpayers to foot the bill. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're imploding because it and actually, if you look at the public sector unions, if they had just not been so and the government entities that oversaw them, local and state mostly, had not been in cahoots with them to raid the pension systems with a promise we'll put more in next year. More money has been put into public sector pensions by taxpayers than in almost any other entity in the United States. But guess what? It's all gone.
Right.
So the money that the taxpayer has put in there is not there anymore.
Right. Well, it's like Social Security and everything else.
Well, you know, Social Security would be just fine if it stuck to what Social Security was. In other words, if you don't put any money in, you shouldn't get any money out.
Correct. Well, that's the thing with when Newt Gingrich forced Clinton to sign welfare reform, the liberal end around to reinstate welfare was to put everybody who used to be on welfare and Social Security disability.
Because Social Security, the trust fund, had money. So,
it's not considered. It's not considered a program that you can cut the same way you can cut welfare, and it's not looked at the same way. And I think that was like, oh, we'll just make the rules for getting on disability a lot more lax, and we'll push everybody over there. Like, I don't know about down by you, but up here, there's lawyers who specialize in helping people get their Social Security disability approvals. And they do it for free, and then they charge Social Security the whatever their fee is at the end.
We don't have a lot of that here, but we do have some. However, I think that if you've put money into Social Security, which anyone from age 14 on does. If you've put money in and you've worked and you're disabled, you should be able to at least get the money you put in out plus whatever the prime interest rate was during that period. You know what I'm saying? As if you put that money aside in a bank.
Cash out whenever you want.
Yeah. But they're just throwing people on now that have never worked, never put any money in. And so that they just use that as a piggy bank.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the new welfare. So what else is going on? What else do you want to talk about? Is this your first time doing any kind of a thing, a podcast or radio show or anything like that?
Yes, you're breaking me in.
So this is like the exclusive scoop on the voice of SnitFit.
This is the voice of SnitFit for the very first time. And I'm also talking to some...
I'm honored.
Well, I'm honored that that you had the patience to work with me through actually getting online.
Oh, my pleasure.
However, I am talking to some radio talk show hosts and some other podcasts to do a regular skit with them. Skit, segment, whatever you want to call it. So I thought I would practice with you first.
Perfect. I'm so happy about it.
And so far, 90% of my followers have said they would actually tune in.
That's pretty good.
We'll see how that goes.
If that works, that would be great. So do you have anything else you want to talk about or anything else going
on? You know, it's your show, so you can hit that little mic button anytime you want. But about the only other thing that's going on today... Let's talk about the I'll make a suggestion.
Okay, go ahead.
The Cambridge Analytica brouhaha.
Yeah.
And Facebook.
All right. So for me, all right, I'll go back a little bit. When Edward Snowden came out and leaked that the NSA was spying on everyone in the world and collecting all the phone conversations and emails and text messages that were sent to every person on the planet, I didn't realize it was news because I thought we already knew that was happening. And as it turned out, that I guess that hadn't been officially confirmed, but it had been in so many movies and I'd seen so many references to it in so many places that I just thought everyone knew that was going on. And this thing with the Cambridge Analytica is, to me, is the same thing. I think, you know, when you go online and you click that, I agree to your terms thing, and you start putting information and pictures of yourself. I just assumed everybody knew you were like all your data was being scooped up and used for commercial purposes. So when I heard that everyone's shocked and they're actually talking about arresting people, I was pretty surprised.
It is the most ridiculous thing. If you took that terms of service agreement to any competent lawyer and asked them to review it to help you negotiate it, excuse me. Number one, they would have to hire 3 or 4 different experts to help them review it. And then they would tell you by no means sign this.
Correct.
However, you want to use Facebook. I personally don't use Facebook. I stick to Twitter, and I'm going to try these formats. But the thing about it that is so disingenuous is that if you go back to 2012, I've posted some of the articles, The Guardian, The Washington Post. There are probably a couple of others where the left and the Obama administration, their re-election team, they were all bragging and they were getting kudos from the left, mainstream media. Well, saying the left of mainstream media is like synonymous, but they were getting kudos for how they harnessed Facebook and social media and teamed up to target, get all this targeting data. The reason Obama won his reelection, I put it down to Obama phones, because that's how they reached out to everybody. Oh yeah. If you hand out 3 million it was like 10 million Obama phones. If you hand out 10 million Obama phones and you can text message them and they can register to vote over the phone, just go down the line. You basically mobilized 10 million voters that are probably going to vote for you.
I really thought Romney made this such a strategic error after the first debate when he challenged Obama and really pushed on him and really came off as being strong. And then somebody must have gotten his ear and said, "Oh, don't do that. It looks like you're being mean." And after that and all the debates, he was just kind of a wimp. And I thought that was it seemed like the turning point in the polls too. But maybe it was a combination of a lot of things. But I don't think Romney helped himself any being overly polite and nice. And
the first debate was awesome. I remembered it. I watched it. And I'm like, finally, an adult. I hate using that term because that's a good word the left uses. But I'm like, okay, I voted for Romney. I helped Romney. Because he is a businessman. Businessmen, if they're not in jail by the time they turn 50, they understand the gray areas. They have lawyers, they have advisors, you know what I'm saying? So businessmen work in the gray. The rules are different in every city, state, and country. So, but they work in the gray. They don't violate the law. They take advantage of it, like everyone else does.
Sure.
But I thought he would be a competent manager.
Well, I thought it'd be perfect. Obviously, after all that washed out, and looking at what he did, saving the Olympics in Salt Lake City that were about to blow up right before they happened, and bringing that in under budget and on time, I thought he'd be the perfect choice for the VA administrator. I thought he'd be the perfect person for Trump to appoint to run the VA and get it under control and get service where it belonged, to take care of our veterans all over the country, and to do it in a way that made sense and didn't cost too much money. And, I thought, man, that's the guy. And when they were talking after the election, they were meeting and talking. I thought, man, that's what he's trying to get them to do. But nothing came of it. But
well, Romney's problem was that Romney is a quitter and a loser, as it turned out.
I think that's true.
And also, excuse me?
He wants to be liked, I think, is really the thing.
I didn't catch that.
I think he wants to be liked. He can't stand that people don't like him, that he gets criticized. He can't stand it.
You know what? Yeah, that's a way of putting it. Romney is a nice person. He's a nice person at heart. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
He is the Jimmy Carter of the right, Yes, lost it after other women, but only in his mind.
Sure.
So, but he just could not deal with the nastiness of the left, you know.
Right.
And
yep.
Speaking of that, Eric Holder coming out and saying, "Oh, you want to have a knife fight? Let's have a knife fight." And my first thought is, dude, do not challenge 100 million people with guns and a S load of ammo to a knife fight.
Not a good plan. All right, listen, I sniff it. I got to get back on the road. I appreciate you so much doing this today.
Okay.
And everybody wants to check you out can find you on Twitter at SNITFIT.
Yes, sir. And I would be, not I would be, I am. I'm interested in doing this again if you would have me again.
For sure. Absolutely. It was fun.
And we can work out, I mean, people need to know that this was totally impromptu. This is the first time we've ever spoke to each other.
Yeah.
So I thought it went well, considering.
Definitely.
There was no planning.
That's true.
And no teleprompter.
No, yeah, I don't do teleprompter.
Well, listen, I look forward to your post, and tweet it out.
I will. In just a minute. So, everybody, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the In the Truck podcast.